Chapter 7, Rapunzel's Tower. The twins had been running for almost an hour straight, and they were starting to feel it. Their adrenaline was slowly running out, and the pains in their sides were increasing with every step they took. But since something dangerous seemed to happen every time they stopped moving, they were motivated to keep going.
"After all this running, PE testing should be a breeze,"
Connor said through heavy wheezes.
"We're almost there," Alex said unconvincingly. "Just a little farther."
The forest had changed as they ran through it. The trees weren't so thick, and there was more space and grass between them. More sunlight fell through the branches, so nothing was in the dark. The path became wider, too, and much more visible. The twins didn't feel as threatened by their surroundings. The forest almost grew friendlier the closer they traveled to the Corner Kingdom. Connor collapsed to the ground. He was breathing harder than a fish out of water.
"I can't run anymore. I can't take another step,"
he said, with his limbs spread out as if he were making a snow angel in the dirt.
"We can't stop moving until we get into the Corner Kingdom,"
Alex reminded him, through her own heavy breathing.
"I think we're there," Connor said.
"How do you know?"
Alex asked.
"That's how,"
Connor said, and pointed upward. In the distance, a tall tower was visible above the treetops. It was circular and made of square stones. There was a single window near the top, just below the pointed roof made of hay. It was partially covered in thick vines of ivy. Alex gasped and clutched her hands together.
"It's Rapunzel's tower,"
Alex said, and her eyes became a little misty at the sight of it.
"Are you seriously crying?"
said Connor, who was still on the ground.
"It's just how I imagined it," Alex said. "Get up. We're getting a closer look."
Alex yanked on her brother's arm until he climbed to his feet, and the twins walked through the trees until they came to the base of the tower. It was even taller than it looked, a few hundred feet at least. The twins' necks began to ache after looking up at the tower for a while. A large golden plaque was displayed in the ground in front of it that said, "Queen Rapunzel's Tower."
"It must have been so hard for her," Alex said. "Seeing people in places so far away and never being able to visit them."
"At least she never had to worry about burglars," Connor said.
"I've got to go up there," Alex said.
"Do you have a jetpack or a grappling hook that I'm unaware of?"
Connor asked her.
"No, I'll have to climb it,"
Alex said, surprising herself with a declaration.
"You have officially lost your mind," Connor said. "We've almost been killed twice, and we haven't even been here a full day yet. We need to stop fooling around and find a way home, Alex. What part of that don't you understand?"
"Look," Alex said, "I'm going to climb up there for just a few minutes, and then as soon as I climb back down, we'll read the journal and find out what all the wishing spell items are, okay?"
"Alex,"
Connor began. His face was turning pink.
"Please, Connor," Alex said. "I need to do this, or I'll regret it forever."
Connor shook his head with the frustration that only a sibling could cause. He wanted to lecture her about how childish she was acting, but the way she was looking at him, with her big, wanting eyes, prevented him. It was so rare that Alex ever needed something. He supposed one last stop couldn't hurt.
"Don't kill yourself," Connor said. "But while you're up there, I'm going to start reading the journal and make a list of the wishing spell items we need to find."
Alex happily nodded and put her bag on the ground. She stretched for the climb she was about to make. Connor sat on the ground and began flipping through the pages of the journal. Climbing the tower was easier said than done. After searching around the base of the tower for a place to put her first step, Alex could tell why a long train of golden hair might be needed to get to the top of it. Eventually, she found a stone block with a chip large enough to put her foot in and take her first step.
"Here I go," Alex said. "Gosh, I wish I had a camera."
"Trust me," Connor said. "The real Alex I know isn't going to want proof of this."
It was like climbing the world's most difficult rock climbing wall. She relied on cracks and chips and uneven bricks sticking out just enough to put her hands and feet on. She moved slowly but carefully. If she were any larger, it wouldn't have worked.
"You're still at the bottom," Connor said, looking up from the journal after a few minutes.
"Shut up, Connor," Alex yelled back at him.
"I'm just saying, at the rate you're going, Mom's going to be 80 by the time we get home, whether there's a time difference or not," he said.
After some time had gone by and she had gotten the hang of it, Alex moved more quickly, carefully pulling herself up using the ivy. The higher she climbed, the less she looked down at the ground, fearing it would tamper with her effort to reach the top.
She was so determined to see the top of the tower, to be in the room where Rapunzel had lived, and to see what Rapunzel had seen through her window every day. She wanted to be where somebody else had been during the loneliest times of their life. Rapunzel's story had always been so easy for Alex to identify with. Alex felt she was in a tower of her own, looking at the world from an unreachable location. She was almost halfway up the tower by now, and she was above all the trees in the forest. Any tiny misstep would no longer result in a potential injury. It would mean death.
"There's a reason the witch put Rapunzel up there, you know," Connor called up to her, "so no one could reach her."
"I'm not listening to you," Alex said, and then stupidly looked down. Beads of sweat appeared on Alex's forehead. She felt like her heart had fallen out of her body. What was she doing? There was no way she could climb back down. Was she really risking her life just to see the inside of a tower? If she ever reached the top, would she be able to get back down? Would she have to wait until her hair grew long enough to climb before she saw anyone again? What would Connor do if she got stuck up there? Would he try to find the fairy tale world equivalent to a fire department with a ladder long enough to get her down? Or would he find the wishing spell items on his own and go home without her? The more Alex worried, the more she climbed. She knew it wouldn't be productive to worry and stay still, so she just kept going. It felt like hours had gone by. She looked up. She was only a few feet away from the window. Just a few more feet and she'd be there. Finally, she felt the windowsill with her hands and slowly pulled herself up to it. Then through it. She was almost through the window. Alex swung her legs over the window and into the tower. "Thank God," she said to herself. She might be stuck in the tower, but at least she was safe. Alex looked around the tower. It wasn't at all what she'd expected. It was a large circular room with no furniture or decoration of any kind. In fact, it was completely empty except for some hay and bird droppings littered around the floor. "Hi, Alex," said a voice inside the tower. Alex jumped and screamed. She was completely shocked to see Connor sitting up against the tower wall just a few feet away from her.
"It took you long enough to get up here," he said with a laugh.
He was eating an apple, and he had the journal open in his lap.
"How in the world did you get up here?" Alex demanded.
She was still out of breath from her climb.
"I took the stairs," Connor said with a mocking grin. "I was reading the journal. It says that after Rapunzel became queen, she installed a staircase in her tower so she could come back and visit whenever she wanted. The door to the staircase was on the other side of the tower. We just didn't see it."
"Oh," Alex said sheepishly. "That would make sense."
"Apparently, since Rapunzel was the only known ward of the witch, when the witch died, Rapunzel inherited all the land from her. That's how she became a queen," Connor informed her. "But you would have known that if you had just read the journal. It's full of fun facts and helpful hints on how to get inside difficult places."
"I suppose," Alex said, and straightened her headband. She wasn't going to let this ruin the accomplishment she had felt after climbing the tower. She turned to look out Rapunzel's window. The tower was surrounded by a sea of trees. Far off into the distance, Alex could barely see the rooftops of a tiny village. Beyond the village was a large mountain range that rolled across the horizon. Now this was exactly what Alex had expected.
"It's quite a view, isn't it?" Connor asked.
"Yes," Alex said, almost in a whisper. "It's breathtaking. I just wish we could see it all. Everything in the land of stories. But I did a lot of thinking on my way up here, and I know we have to get home. That's what we need to focus on."
"About that," Connor said. "You really need to read this, Alex. I've only skipped through a little bit of it. Most of it's hard to read because it's written by hand, but the situation is much more serious than we thought."
He handed her the journal. Alex sat next to him and opened it to the first page and began reading.
"Dear friends, I don't know how, why, or where you found this journal, but since it has found its way into your possession, I hope that it can be of use to you. What I'm about to tell you is going to sound ludicrous, but I ask that you allow me to explain. Had I not seen it with my own eyes, I would have never believed it myself. I am but a simple man from a simple village in the charming kingdom. But I have been to another world. It's a world with people and technologies that our world has only dreamed of, and places we can only imagine. I know it seems absurd, but I promise you that an extraordinary place exists out there. We just can't see it. During my visit, among the many things I experienced, I fell in love. I fell into a love so deep, it was unlike anything I've ever known. I never thought this kind of love was real. It's as if I'm no longer living for myself anymore, but for her. So I must find a way back. I must find a way to see her again. The first time I traveled into the other world was simple. A fairy that knew of his existence allowed me to travel with her. She warned me not to get attached to anything or anyone, but while my brain was obedient to her request, my heart betrayed it. The fairy has since banned me from traveling with her, so this time I must find my way into the other world on my own. Naturally, I didn't know where to start. How does one go about traveling into another world? Who was I even to ask? How would I even be able to ask without appearing like a lunatic? Cinderellian society is very judgmental, and I surely would have been ridiculed if my mission were discovered. I came to the conclusion that I'd have to ask someone who was crazy in their own right, so no one would believe them if they spoke of what I inquired. I needed someone I could trust, but whom would never be trusted by the world. I figured such a person didn't exist, and I lost hope. Until I remember the traveling tradesman. He was infamous for finding naive children in the woods and trading their items of value for items he claimed to be magical. He was rumored to have given Jack the beans that grew his beanstalk. Surely, if anyone had heard of another world, it would be him. He was on the move at all times, since warrants for his arrest had been issued in all the kingdoms. He would be nearly impossible to find, but then again, my entire quest was virtually impossible. Late one night, I traveled to a tavern up the stream from my home. There, I befriended two farmers, and I proceeded to buy them round after round of drinks. After we'd had a few laughs about childhood adventures and adolescent mistakes, I asked them if they had ever heard of the traveling tradesman. They both grew very quiet and were almost offended by the question. I assured them it was purely out of curiosity, and I wasn't accusing them of anything. I purchased another round of drinks, and after they were consumed, the farmers confessed that they had done business with him in earlier years. "I traded two goats for a watering can that was supposed to magically water all my crops by itself," one of the farmers said. "The damn thing never worked, and it had a leak. It was the biggest mistake of my life." "I traded two cows for a goose he told me would lay golden eggs," the other claimed. "The goose was male. He gave me a gander." They tried convincing me to call off my search for him, but after one final round of drinks, they told me of the routes he covertly took through the woods. I must have searched every patch of trees in the Charming Kingdom. Finally, in the woods just south of the Red Riding Hood Kingdom border, I found him. The traveling tradesman was an odd, elderly, disheveled man. He wore several layers of raggedy clothing, and he had a long gray beard. There were dark circles under his eyes, and one of the eyes wandered to the left, so it was difficult to tell what or whom he was looking at. He traveled with a large cart that was pulled by a single mule. He was making a deal with a small boy holding a chicken when I first saw him. "Wear this bear claw, and you'll grow up to be the strongest boy in the village," the tradesman told the boy, and then placed a necklace with a large bear claw around his neck and took the chicken from him. The boy smiled and ran off. The tradesman placed the chicken in the back of his cart. He must have made other trades that day, because he had already collected two geese and a pig.
"Are you a friend or a foe?" the tradesman asked me.
"A friend, I believe," I said.
"Oh, good," he said with a jolly clap. "Then what may I do for you, friend? Would you like a bag of magic pebbles to grow into boulders? It'll only cost you a duck. Or perhaps you'd like to trade a swine for a loaf of bread that'll make you never be hungry again."
"No, thank you," I said cautiously. "I've come to ask for advice."
"Advice?" the tradesman said.
The eyebrow above his wandering eye rose.
"That, my friend, is something no one has ever asked me for. What do you wish to know?"
"I am wondering," I started, but wasn't sure how to put it into words. "What is the farthest distance you've traveled?" The tradesman scratched his beard and thought about it.
"Well, I'd honestly say there isn't a place in this world I haven't been," he told me. "I've traveled from the southwest to the northeast, and from the southeast to the northwest. I've been from the bottom of the Corner Kingdom to the top of the Sleeping Kingdom, and from the tip of the Elf Empire to the coast of the Fairy Kingdom."
"What about farther than that?" I interrupted him, fearing he might continue listing every journey he had ever taken.
"Farther than that?"
Both of the tradesman's eyebrows were raised now.
"What's farther than that? Only ocean is beyond that, and that's it."
"What about a different world? Have you ever heard of one or how to travel to one?" I finally asked. The tradesman got a funny look in his eyes, or should I say, eye.
"Young man, I've been all over the world and I have never seen any suggestion of there being another," he said.
This topic upset him somehow,
and he hopped aboard his cot and took the reins of his mule.
"Wait! Please don't go!" I pleaded.
"You youngsters always take pleasure in harassing an old man. Well, I won't allow it," he said.
He began to travel up the path. I was so desperate, I stood in front of his mule and was nearly trampled.
"I mean you no harm, old man," I assured him. "You don't understand. I've been to another world, another place and time, and have seen extraordinary things. I need to go back. It may be the greatest wish I will ever have."
My arms were spread out, and I fell to my knees. I felt like an imbecile, confessing a preposterous need to a preposterous man. The tradesman sat still with his good eye fixated on me.
"Is it truly the most desired wish in your heart?" he asked.
"Yes," I pleaded. "I've never wanted anything more in my life."
"If it's a wish you desire, then there's only one thing you need," he said.
"What is that?" I asked him.
"The wishing spell," the tradesman said.
At first I thought he was joking.
"The wishing spell?" I asked him.
"You mean the childish legend?" "It's as real as the nose on my face," the tradesman said. "Many men have spent their lives trying to obtain it. Legend has it that if you collect a series of objects and place them in a close proximity, the collector's one true wish will be granted."
I didn't know whether or not to believe him. Perhaps he was harassing me now. My brain was critical, but my heart chose to learn more.
"And how do I find these items?" I asked.
"I don't have the slightest idea," he said.
Now I was frustrated with him. All of that explanation for nothing. I turned my back on him and began heading back home.
"But I know someone who does,"
the tradesman called after me.
"Who?" I demanded.
"I never trade for free,"
the tradesman said, and extended an open palm toward me. I placed a few gold coins in his hand. He kept his hand extended, and I placed a few more coins into it until he was satisfied.
"Her name is Hagatha," the tradesman said.
"Where can I find her?"
"Take this path west into the dwarf forest, past the three boulders, and then follow the smoke," the tradesman said,
and that was all the direction he gave. He took the reins of his mule and traveled away from me. Had I been thinking clearly, I would have chased after him and asked for more instructions, but instead, I took off running toward the dwarf forests. I had never been inside the dwarf forest before. I had been told of the danger since I was a child, and once I was there, I knew why I had been warned. The trees grew so thick and close that someone could be standing 3 feet away from you, and you would never know they were there. It took 2 days to find the three boulders the tradesman had spoken of. They were three large rocks that stuck straight out of the ground and were tilted in a peculiar position. I thought perhaps they might have been pointing at something, so I lowered my head to look in the direction they pointed. The boulders pointed directly between two trees, separated just enough so that you could see a wide patch of the sky, and in this patch, I could see smoke. I ran toward the source of the smoke. Wherever it was coming from was completely off the path, and I almost seriously injured myself jumping over bushes and tree roots as I went. Occasionally, I could see the sky through the tree branches and could tell if I was off track. I must have traveled in circles for hours. Every time I thought I was just about to find the place from which the smoke came, the wind would shift it in another direction. I was lost. Every way I turned looked exactly the same. I felt as if the forest had swallowed me. The sun was setting, and the smoke became harder to see. I started to panic. There was no shelter in sight. I thought for sure a treacherous beast would find me during the night and make a feast out of me. I started running again. I could barely see where I was going at this point. I could hear howling in the distance. I tripped and fell straight through a large thorn bush. I landed hard in the grass on the other side of the thorn bush. I was scraped, scratched, and bleeding. I got to my feet and looked around. I was standing in a large, circular clearing in the forest, surrounded by a large wall of thorn bush. In the center of this clearing was a small hut with a hay roof and a brick chimney, and rising out of this chimney was the smoke I had been following. No wonder it had been so hard to find. I must have been wandering in circles around it, not knowing it was hidden behind the thorn bush. I approached the hut slowly. It had one door and two windows, and that was all. I went to knock on the door, but it burst open before I had a chance.
"Who are you?" said the woman who emerged from the hut.
I knew from the second I saw her that it was Hagatha. She looked like a human tree stump. She was short and wore a brown hooded cloak. Deep wrinkles circled her face, and one of her eyes was squinted. Her nose was one of the smallest I'd ever seen, and was neighbored by a gigantic mole.
"Are you Hagatha?" I asked her.
"How did you find me?" she snapped.
I tripped the thorn bush, I said.
But how did you know I was here?
She asked. Her squinted eyes squinted even more.
The traveling tradesman, I told her. He said you knew of the wishing spell.
Hagatha grunted and sighed at the same time. Her lips wrinkled, and she looked me up and down. Reluctantly, she gestured me to follow her inside.
Come in, come in, Hagatha said.
The inside of the hut was an utter mess. There were vials of strange liquids everywhere. Some bubbled, some glistened, some steamed. There were dozens of glass jars containing the strangest things. Dead and alive reptiles, insects of every species, even a glass jar of various eyeballs. Even though they had been plucked out of their owner's lids, I swear one of them blinked at me. I was surprised to see how many animals were inside the hut as well. Everything from geese and chickens to hummingbirds and monkeys all resided in cages. They were all restless, prisoners no doubt.
Have a seat, Hagatha instructed.
She pointed to a chair at the end of a very large table, so large that it almost took up the entire hut.
I see you are a collector of sorts, I said.
She didn't welcome the conversation. She ignored me and collected a few items around the room, a bowl here, a vial there.
The thorn bush surrounding your home is very clever, I said. It must keep out most unwanted visitors.
Most, she said, and glared at me. That thorn bush is from the Sleeping Kingdom. I planted it here, and it grew around my home in a perfect circle, just as it grew around the castle while the queen was in her 100-year slumber. You are the first to break through it.
I do apologize.
This will cost you 15 gold coins, Hagatha said, and took a seat across from me.
For what? I asked.
You want to know what the wishing spell items are, don't you? She asked. That is why you're here, is it not?
I reached into my pocket and laid all the coins I had left on the table. Unfortunately, doing business with a tradesman had left me short.
I only have 14 coins, I told her.
Hagatha did not look pleased.
You stupid youth and your wishes. Very well, she said, and scooped up all the coins with one swipe.
She placed a bowl in front of her and emptied the contents of two vials into it, one red liquid, the other blue.
One eye of an eagle, the wings of a pixie, and the art of a newt, Hagatha said, and added these items into the bowl. Plus 3 drops of giant blood, the big toe of an ogre, and a straw of gold hay. That completes the potion.
With all the ingredients added, the liquid in the bowl started to smoke and glow. Hagatha leaned over it and breathed it in. She closed her eyes and lost herself in a moment of deep thought.
Does this potion tell you what the wishing spell items are? I asked her.
No, but it helps me remember, Hagatha said. You aren't the first, and you won't be the last person to request the list. Consider yourself warned. Many people have lost their lives trying to acquire these items. They are impossible to collect.
I'd rather die trying than live the rest of my life wondering if I could have done it, I said.
Then listen carefully to what I'm about to say, because I'll only say it once, Hagatha said.
I leaned as close to her as I possibly could. The anticipation made every second feel like an hour. This is what I'd come all this way for.
There are 8, Hagatha said.
She took a deep breath and then listed the items.
Glass that housed a lonely soul up till midnight's final toll. A saber from the deepest sea meant for a groom's mortality. The bark of a basket held in fright while running from a bark with a bite. A stony crown that's made to share, found deep within a savage lair. A needle that pierced the lovely skin of a princess with beauty found within. A wavy lock of golden rope that once was freedom's only hope. Glittering jewels whose value increased after preserving the false deceased. Teardrops of a maiden fairy, feeling neither magical nor merry.
I repeated the list to myself the entire way home, and wrote the wishing spell list and my journey thus far into this journal. I don't know how I'm going to gather these items, but my goal is to find them and then record how I manage it, in case I ever need to do it again. If you're reading this, I hope it means I succeeded. And if you're reading this and are about to start a journey of your own, I wish you luck.
Wow, Alex said, looking up from the journal.
You can say that again, Connor said. You read that much faster than I did.
Did you read any farther? Alex asked. Did he find all the items? Did he make it back?
I don't know. There are a lot of pages missing, Connor said.
Alex scanned through the list of the wishing spell items. She hadn't expected them to be hidden within riddles.
Most of these are pretty easy to figure out, she said. Like a needle that pierced the lovely skin of a princess with beauty found within. That's obviously the spindle on Sleeping Beauty's spinning wheel.
And a wavy lock of golden rope that once was freedom's only hope, Connor said. That's totally lock of Rapunzel's hair.
Connor looked around the space where he was sitting. From between two floorboards, he pulled out a lock of long golden hair.
Found one, Connor said. One of the first things I noticed when I got up here was how much that Rapunzel girl shed. Now we're 1/8 of the way home.
Alex carefully wrapped the lock of golden hair in a tissue from her school bag.
What do you suppose glass that housed a lonely soul up till midnight's final toll means? She asked. Whose soul was covered in glass?
I know, Connor said. Cinderella's glass slipper. That covered the sole of her foot.
Of course, Alex said. This list was spoken. Maybe Hagatha meant soul, like on a foot, but the man heard it as soul, like a person's spirit. Connor, you're a genius.
There's an alternative spelling? Connor asked, but Alex went on.
I wonder what the bark of a basket held in fright while running from a bark with a bite means, said Alex, thinking hard.
Basket, basket, basket. Bite, bite, bite. Little Red Riding Hood! Her basket must be made out of tree bark, and the bark with a bite is talking about the big bad wolf.
Okay, Connor said. That would make sense.
Alex stood up and started pacing around the tower.
Glittering jewels whose value increased after preserving the false deceased. That's a tough one, she said. Who was falsely deceased?
Didn't people think Snow White was dead after she bit into the poison apple? Connor asked.
Yes, that's right, said Alex, jumping up and down. She had a coffin made of glass and jewels from the dwarf mines. That must be what it means.
I'm so glad Dad and Grandma read to us so much growing up, Connor said. Whoever would have thought it would be this useful?
Teardrops of a maiden fairy, feeling neither magical nor merry. I guess we'll just have to find a fairy who has recently broken up with her boyfriend or something, Alex surmised.
You don't think we could just kick her and make her cry? Connor asked. That just seems easier to me.
Alex ignored him and vigorously flipped through the journal again.
Glass slipper, check. Spindle, check. Coffin, check, Alex said.
According to the notes scribbled in the margins, the author of the journal seems to agree with our guesses. I still don't know what some of these things are, though, like a saber from the deepest sea meant for a groom's mortality, or a stony crown that's made to share, found deep within a savage lair.
Like I said, there are a lot of pages missing, Connor said.
Alex was disheartened by this. The items they knew of seemed virtually impossible to collect, let alone the items they didn't know of. She walked over to the window and looked out at the view. The sun was just about to set, and one by one, the fireplaces in the village nearby were lit and sent trails of smoke into the darkening sky.
What if we get some of these riddles wrong? She asked. What if we guessed the wrong thing? What if the author guessed wrong? What if he never made it back? What if he died trying?
We'll just have to do our best, Connor said, joining Alex at the window.
Some annoying little girl told me once that optimism always pays off, and she's usually right about things.
Alex smirked warmly at her brother.
Okay, then, she said. So far, we have a lock of Rapunzel's hair. We still need to collect Cinderella's slipper, Sleeping Beauty's spindle, jewels from Snow White's coffin, bark from Red Riding Hood's basket, tears from a fairy, plus two other items we have no idea about.
Connor gulped at hearing the list. They both looked out over the horizon and at the sea of trees that surrounded the tower. Somewhere out there, all of these things were waiting to be found.
It looks like we're going to see more of the land of stories than we thought, Connor said.
Chapter 8, A Hidden Place. The northern tip of the Sleeping Kingdom was an ugly and vacant place. It was known for its bare trees, bumpy paths, and dangerously high cliffs. Small stones were scattered on the earth, making it nearly impossible to travel by carriage. Even though it rained every so often, nothing ever grew, making it impossible for any animals to live there. In the middle of this dry and deserted place was a small castle surrounded by a deep and empty moat. It was ancient and made of dark bricks, wooden doors, and had been through years of decay. No one knew who had built the castle or why it had been built, but then again, very few people even knew of its existence. The inside of the castle was covered in a thick layer of dust. Cobwebs almost as old as the castle were on every windowsill,
even though there were no spiders to be found. All the rooms and corridors were empty, except for the occasional decrepit chair or table placed in a corner. A great hall completed the eastern wing of the castle. Floor-length windows bordered the hall, letting in a lot of light, but they were so old that the glass distorted the outside world. The castle couldn't have been a less desirable place to be, but for one woman, it was the perfect place to hide. Somehow, the evil queen had escaped the dungeons of Snow White's palace. She managed to get a hold of her magic mirror and travel to a place where she knew she would never be found. The castle acted as the perfect sanctuary, where she could finish the work she had started so long ago. The evil queen was not a stranger to this place. Over the last century or so, many people had come to the castle, but only she and a few others were fortunate enough to have left it, including someone the former queen had not seen in a great while. She had recently sent word to this old friend, asking him to come and aid her, and so she waited for him to arrive, knowing that he would any day now, for he owed her his life. The evil queen stood facing her magic mirror with open palms and closed eyes. She was quite calm for being the most wanted woman alive. To her right, resting on a short stool, was the heart of stone she had always kept close. Although it was one of the most infamous objects in all of the kingdoms, very few people had ever seen the evil queen's magic mirror. Many believed it was made of glamorous materials, like gold and diamonds, and glass so pure one would swear they could walk through it. In reality, the mirror was tall and wide, with a black frame that peaked at the top. Tangled vines made of cast iron wove through the frame. The reflection was cloudy, as if it were a glass doorway into a very cold and foggy place. Although there was very little moisture in the air, perspiration dripped down the glass. The evil queen opened her eyes and gazed deep into the mirror.
"Mirror, mirror, on the wall, how long till the huntsman answers my call?"
she asked it. The ghostly silhouette of a man appeared in the reflection. It spoke slowly and softly, with a low and hoarse voice.
"While my queen awaits an old friend, once dear, the huntsman travels very near."
The man in the mirror slowly faded away. Within moments, three loud knocks came from the other side of the great hall doors. "You may enter," the evil queen said. The doors opened, creaking terribly, and a man entered the hall. He was tall, broad, and just on the verge of old age. He wore a variety of animal skins and had a limp in his right leg. His beard was light brown and graying. A crossbow was attached to his back, and a large hunting knife hung from his waist.
"My huntsman has returned," the evil queen said.
The huntsman walked across the hall to where the evil queen was standing.
"It's been a long time since I last saw your face," she said, "and I still find it hard to stomach looking at you."
The huntsman fell to his knees and wept at her feet.
"Your Majesty," the huntsman cried, "please forgive me, for I have never forgiven myself after failing you."
The evil queen looked down at him coldly. She had no sympathy left inside her for anyone.
"After all you had done for me, and after all the mercy you had shown me, I could not kill the princess in the forest," the huntsman said. "And just look at all the pain it has caused you. Had I done as you asked, you would still be queen."
The evil queen let his pathetic sobs continue for a while longer. She showed no sign of forgiveness. He deserved to feel this way. She stepped away from the huntsman and peered through a window at the lifeless land that surrounded them.
"You and I were both prisoners in this castle once," the evil queen said. "I never imagined that one day it would act as my only refuge."
"You saved me,"
the huntsman said.
"I surely would have died here had it not been for you. That is why I swore to you then that I would do anything to assist you with your mission. But I failed you."
"And after all this time, I'm still on the same mission as I was back then. So do not cry, old friend. I've called you here for a chance at redemption."
She walked back to him and gently placed a hand on his cheek. The huntsman stopped crying and looked up at the queen with huge, sad eyes.
"Redemption?"
the huntsman asked.
"You mean, Your Majesty, you're still giving me a chance to serve you after what I've done?"
The huntsman's tears quadrupled in size, and he continued sobbing.
"Curse this world for claiming you to be anything less than the saint that you are. I'd kill every person who's tarnished your name if I could."
"That won't be necessary," the evil queen said. "I have another task for you. It requires a great deal of traveling,
And since being the most wanted fugitive alive prevents me from doing it myself, I've called you here.
The huntsman grew quiet and lowered his head shamefully.
Your greatness,
he said.
I have grown too old to travel. I can barely walk as it is.
The evil queen looked down at him with an angry brow.
You imbecile, she said, raising her voice. You mean to tell me you traveled all the way here to tell me that you are useless?
The huntsman rose to his feet with difficulty.
Not at all, my queen, he said. Please let me explain. I am far too old to serve you, but my daughter is able and willing to help you complete what I cannot.
Daughter? The evil queen asked.
The doors at the end of the hall opened again. This time, a woman entered dragging a large wagon behind her. She was tall and thin, with hair so dark red it seemed to have a violet tint. Her eyes were bright green, and her clothing was made entirely of plants and leaves and other greenery. The wagon she pulled contained a large square object. It was large and flat, and was covered in a silk cloth for safety. After seeing her, the evil queen could recall a time many years ago when she had known the huntsman's daughter. She had always been a shy little girl, and had lived with her father in the palace when the evil queen was on the throne.
You've grown up, the evil queen said.
The huntsman's daughter nodded in her direction.
You will speak when I address you,
the evil queen demanded.
My daughter is mute, your majesty,
the huntsman said.
She's never said a word in her life. However silent she may be, it does not make her any less capable of doing what you ask of her. She's brought you a gift to prove herself.
The huntsman's daughter carefully removed the object from her wagon and gently placed it beside the queen's magic mirror. Once it was positioned correctly, she removed the silk cloth. It was a mirror, smaller than the magic mirror. It was circular, with flowers engraved into a square, golden frame. The evil queen knew exactly what it was the second it was revealed.
The Mirror of Truth, she said.
The former queen had acquired it during her reign. It was another magic mirror that showed one's true self when one stood before it.
How did you get this?
The evil queen asked.
She broke into the palace to retrieve it for you,
the huntsman said. The evil queen touched the Mirror of Truth's frame. She had forgotten the detail in the carvings. She turned and faced the huntsman's daughter.
You shall be my huntress, the evil queen declared.
The huntress bowed and kissed the queen's hand.
What is the task at hand, your majesty?
The huntsman asked.
Have either of you ever heard of the wishing spell?
The evil queen asked. The huntsman and the huntress curiously looked to each other.
No, my queen,
the huntsman said.
Unless you are speaking of the old, foolish fable.
The very one, she said.
I never took it seriously until I recently heard a prisoner in the dungeon mumbling about it moments before his execution. According to the foolish fable, after a group of select objects are collected and placed together, the collector is granted one wish. It doesn't matter how great or small, the wish is guaranteed to be granted. And as you know, I have a wish to be granted.
You want my daughter to collect these items for you, then?
The huntsman asked.
Precisely, the evil queen said. From what I've learned, the task is very dangerous and may take some time. But if she succeeds, I will consider whatever debt you owe diminished.
The huntsman looked to his daughter, and the huntress nodded.
Very well,
he said.
She will do it. What are the items you seek, my queen?
The evil queen took her place before her magic mirror, extended her open palms, and gazed deep inside it.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. What must we seek for the wishing spell that grants all?
She asked. The ghostly silhouette appeared again.
Glass that covered a lonely soul, up till midnight's final toll. A saber from the deepest sea, meant for a groom's mortality. The bark of a basket, held in fright, while running from a bark with a bite. A stony crown that's made to share, found deep within a savage lair. A needle that pierced the lovely skin of a princess with beauty found within. A wavy lock of golden rope that once was freedom's only hope. Glittering jewels whose value increased after preserving the false deceased. Teardrops of a maiden fairy, feeling neither magical nor merry.
There you have it,
the evil queen said to the huntsman and the huntress, but the magic mirror was not finished.
But listen to this, my fair queen, for I offer you a fair warning. For one wish, you are willing to pay any price, unaware that the wishing spell can only happen twice, and the spell can only happen once more, for it was already used once before. In this castle, as we stand, a duo move throughout the land. A young brother and sister collect at a quick pace and may defeat my queen in the wishing spell race.
The man in the mirror faded away, leaving the queen with the worst possible news. Not only was someone else after the objects she needed, but if they were used before she could collect them, the spell could never be used again. She closed her eyes and thought about what her next move would be. She couldn't afford to have any more odds stacked against her. After a lifetime of work, she wasn't about to let two children stand in her way.
I want you to start retrieving the items, the evil queen said to the huntress. I will handle the brother and sister. Now leave me.
The huntsman and the huntress bowed and left the queen alone in the great hall. The evil queen stood before the mirror of truth. Years of being a prisoner had taken its toll on her appearance. It was painful for her to see the aging woman who her reflection had become. She picked up her heart of stone and examined it closely, lightly stroking its sides. The evil queen looked back up at the mirror of truth. This time, there was no reflection of the disheveled woman she had grown into. This time, the face staring back at her was a youthful one. It belonged to a beautiful young maiden with pale skin and long dark hair. She wore a long, white dress with a matching ribbon tied around the waist and was also holding the heart of stone. The girl smiled, but the evil queen did not smile back. She knew the girl in the mirror very well, and she was not Snow White.
Chapter 9. The Charming Kingdom.
Alex and Connor woke up on the floor of Rapunzel's tower just after sunrise. They were snuggled under the blankets Froggy had given them, and they'd used their bags as pillows.
How'd you sleep? Alex asked her brother.
Like I slept on the floor of a tower, Connor said, thinking he'd never take his bed at home for granted again.
He stretched his back, and his joints made sounds like firecrackers. They put away their blankets and decided to get an early start on the day. Alex insisted on tidying up the tower, leaving it in better condition than they had found it in.
I'd hate for anyone to think we made this mess, Alex said.
Connor rolled his eyes at her and made sure she saw it.
What's our next stop? Connor asked Alex.
She looked back and forth from the map in one hand and the journal in the other.
Well, the Charming Kingdom is just east of here, Alex said. I figure it would be wisest to go there and see if we can get a hold of Cinderella's slipper.
And how exactly are we going to do that? Connor asked.
Alex had to think about it.
We'll just ask if we can borrow it, she decided.
Fat chance, Connor said. That's like walking into the White House and asking for the Declaration of Independence.
Although Connor was wrong about the whereabouts of the Declaration of Independence, Alex knew he was right to be concerned. How are they going to get their hands on one of Cinderella's slippers? Surely they must be the most prized possessions of the kingdom.
We'll have to try our best, Alex said. What other option do we have?
The twins traveled down the spiral staircase in the core of Rapunzel's tower and returned to the path. They eventually came to a fork, where a new path splintered off in an eastern direction. The sign above the fork said, Charming Kingdom, and pointed in the direction the new path was headed.
Connor, look at the sign, said Alex, pressing her hands against her cheeks. Now I really wish I had a camera.
They traveled down the new path for quite a while without discovering anything new but the same dirt path and evergreen trees they'd seen for the last 2 days. Connor became more anxious the further he walked, letting out large, extended sighs every minute or so.
Are you sure we aren't lost? I swear I've seen that boulder in that tree about 20 times already, he said, pointing.
I'm positive we're traveling in the right direction. I've been watching the map since we left, Alex said. We should be approaching a stream very soon, and once we cross it, we'll be in the Charming Kingdom.
Connor sighed again. It would be his last one for a while, so he made sure it lasted extra long. A couple of hours later, there was no stream in sight. Connor was starting to lose faith in his sister's navigational abilities.
This place must be bigger than we thought, Alex said. Or this map is completely off scale.
Eventually, the twins found the stream Alex had seen on the map. The path went across a small bridge made out of pale stones and then continued on the other side.
You see, I told you I knew what I was doing, Alex said, with her head held high.
Yeah, Connor said.
Honestly, Connor, I'm a little disappointed in your lack of faith, Alex gloated. If there's one place I should know my way around in, it would have to be...
Grrr!
Connor heard his sister's high-pitched scream before he realized what had happened. A large troll had jumped right in front of them on the bridge. He was short and very wide with an enormous head. He was covered in matted fur with large eyes and a snout. His arms and legs were tiny, but his nails and teeth were sharp and long.
You are on my bridge, the troll shouted. How dare you?
We're so sorry, said Alex, clutching onto her brother like a monkey to a tree. We had no idea this bridge belonged to anyone.
Maybe you should put up a sign or something, Connor suggested, and then regretted it once it made the troll even angrier.
What are you doing on my bridge?
The troll demanded.
Trying to cross into the Charming Kingdom, Alex said. We didn't mean any harm.
No one crosses my bridge without answering a riddle, the troll said.
A riddle?
Alex asked, letting go of Connor.
Oh, you're a bridge troll!
A bridge troll? Connor asked.
Yes, just like in the Three Billy Goats Gruff, Alex said happily.
She was so excited to be witnessing another fairy tale occurrence, all her fear faded away.
If you wish to cross my bridge, you must answer my riddle correctly,
the bridge troll said.
Answer incorrectly, and I'll bite off your head.
Excuse me, bite off our heads?
Connor said. Steam was practically coming from his ears.
What is wrong with everyone in this place? Why does everyone we meet want to eat us? Can someone please explain to me why this keeps happening?
Connor, calm down, Alex insisted. Let's just solve the riddle, and then we'll be on our way.
What if we get the riddle wrong? Connor said.
He'll kill us.
Let's just find another way across the stream.
Connor, don't be silly. If a simple billy goat can answer a riddle correctly, I'm sure we can too, Alex reassured him. Besides, there isn't another bridge for miles.
Connor grunted and crossed his arms.
How are we so sure this is actually his bridge? Connor said. I'd like to see some ownership identification before we continue.
Alex ignored this.
What's your riddle, Mr. Bridge Troll? She asked. May I call you Mr. Bridge Troll?
The bridge troll eyed the twins and jauntily swayed from side to side as he began the riddle.
What can be as small as a pea or as large as the sky and is not owned by the person who purchases it?
It asked. The wheels in Alex's head began turning immediately. She loved riddles.
That's a tricky one,
Alex said, and pressed her index finger against her lips as she thought.
Do you have any guesses, Connor?
Nope, you're on your own, Connor said.
You have one guess before I bite off your head, so guess wisely,
the bridge troll said, doing a small dance and clapping his hands.
That's it, I'm out of here, Connor said.
He walked off the bridge and slowly made his way down to the stream.
Connor, what are you doing? Alex called out.
I'm crossing the stream, Connor yelled back. No bridge is worth that much trouble.
He slowly stepped into the stream and began traveling across it. The water was freezing, but his frustration kept him warm enough that it didn't matter. The water rose higher and higher as he traveled farther across it.
It's not that deep, Alex, Connor said. The current isn't even that strong.
He reached the middle of the stream, and at its steepest, the water came to just above his waist.
You're cheating, Alex said, and then asked the bridge troll, Is that even allowed? Can he do that?
He isn't the one who asked for the riddle. You are,
the bridge troll said.
Connor had crossed the stream by now and was soaking wet.
Alex continued thinking about the riddle.
So it can be as small as a pea and as large as the sky. So basically you're telling me that it can be any size. And the person who buys it doesn't own it. So that means someone else owns it, she thought out loud.
Hurry up, Alex, Connor shouted.
Oh, hush, Alex said. I'm going to say that it must be a gift. A gift can be any size and the receiver is who owns it, not the person who purchases it.
The bridge troll stopped swaying from side to side and slumped over.
That is correct,
the bridge troll said disappointedly.
You may pass.
Alex clapped her hands together and did a small jump. She extended her hand out to offer the troll a handshake, but he ignored it. Instead, he crawled back below to wherever he had just jumped out from.
See?
Alex said when she'd met up with her brother on the other side of the bridge.
I knew I'd answer it correctly.
Connor shook his head. And I'm sure I'll have to hear about it for the rest of our lives, he said.
But let's try to make it to Cinderella's palace by sundown, okay?
The twins continued their journey into the Charming Kingdom. They were excited to see different scenery as they traveled. The evergreen trees they had seen so much of became scarce and were slowly replaced by large oak trees. There were also vast fields of tall grass and wildflowers everywhere they looked.
"It's so beautiful here," Alex said.
They had been walking for hours and still saw no sign of anything. Connor was practically dry by now.
"Where is everything?" Connor asked.
"The Charming Kingdom is a very big place," Alex said. "It's going to take a while to get to the palace."
It began to get dark, and the twins became very worried. There was no shelter in sight. Soon, the moon was their only source of light. They walked a short distance off the path and found a grassy area among a few trees that they assumed, and hoped, was safe, and they decided to spend the night there. Connor tried making a fire by rubbing two sticks together, but was unsuccessful.
"Now I really wish I'd signed up for Boy Scouts," he said.
It was their first night sleeping outside. Both kept waking up every hour or so to make sure they were still safe, because every sound terrified them.
"What was that?"
Alex gasped in the middle of the night.
"That's an owl," Connor said, "or a very inquisitive dove, but either way, I think we're safe."
The next morning, the sunrise woke them. They restlessly got to their feet and returned to the path.
"We're running out of food," Alex said, after eating one of their last apples. "We'll have to stock up as soon as we find a market or something."
"I'm so tired of rolls and apples. I'm starting to think we should have asked Froggy to pack us some flies," Connor said. "Gosh, I would kill for a cheeseburger. Maybe that's why everyone eats each other here. They just haven't discovered fast food yet."
They found a small pond on the side of the path and splashed some water on their faces.
"We look so tired," said Alex, looking at the reflections in the water.
The twins heard a galloping sound coming from behind them on the path. They turned to see a small cart of firewood being pulled by a gray horse. It was steered by a man with a big, floppy green hat.
"Let's ask him how much farther until the palace," Alex said, and ran over to the cart. "Excuse me, sir."
"Whoa,"
the man said, slowing his horse to a stop.
"May I help you?"
"How much further until we reach Cinderella's palace?" Alex asked.
"Are you traveling by foot?"
the man asked.
"Unfortunately," Connor said.
"Then it'll take you days to get there," the man said.
Alex and Connor looked at each other, completely exasperated.
"I'm delivering this firewood near the palace tonight," the man said. "I can give you a ride if you'd like."
Before he could finish his sentence, Connor had climbed aboard the cart.
"Thank you so much," Alex said. "That is so kind of you."
The twins traveled with the man for the rest of the day. Connor made himself comfortable on top of the firewood and napped almost the entire trip, waking up every so often whenever they hit a bump in the road. Alex, on the other hand, took full advantage of having an actual human being to talk to from the fairy tale world.
"What's your name?"
Alex asked the man.
"Smithers," the man said.
"Where are you from?"
she asked.
"I grew up in a small village in the northeastern part of the Charming Kingdom," Smithers said.
"What's it like here?"
Alex said dreamily.
"My brother and I, haven't been around this kingdom very much."
"The Charming Kingdom is a quiet place," Smithers said. "It has many small villages on the outskirts of the kingdom and many wealthy estates in the center, near the palace."
"Have you ever been to the palace before?" Alex asked.
"Oh, yes. I make many deliveries there during the year," he said. "In fact, tonight the king and queen are having a huge ball."
"They are?"
Alex's eyes doubled in size. She shook Connor awake.
"Connor, did you hear that? Cinderella's having a ball tonight. Isn't that wonderful? What are the chances?"
"What? Oh, that's great," Connor said,
and then immediately fell back asleep.
"Why are they having a ball?"
Alex asked.
"They've had one every month since their wedding," Smithers said. "It's a celebration of their marriage."
"What's Queen Cinderella like?" she asked.
"Absolutely beautiful, and the best queen our kingdom has ever had," Smithers said with a big grin. "Not too many people were eager to accept her when she first moved into the palace, though. Many of the aristocratic families were upset that Prince Charming hadn't chosen one of their daughters to wed, but she's overcome all that since."
Alex could tell they were getting much closer to the palace. They passed more small villages, which grew in size and population as they went along. She was so excited to be so close to people, actual people, who had spent their entire lives in the fairy tale world. She wished with all her heart she could say she'd grown up in the Charming Kingdom.
"Do you ever find it overwhelming?" Alex asked Smithers. "Does it ever get frightening living here, and knowing that at any moment a fairy could fly by and grant you a wish, or an ogre could run up and eat you?"
Smithers looked at her curiously. Does such a place exist where people can't unexpectedly be helped or hurt? Alex couldn't think of any. Maybe this world and the world she was from weren't so different after all. The car began passing large estates. Everywhere they looked, they saw another huge, elegant home. They were all so bright and colorful, with pointed roofs that curved on the sides. Some were made from wood, others from brick, and some were covered completely in ivy. It was something straight out of a storybook, and Alex kept reminding herself that she was in one.
We're almost at the palace, Smithers said.
The cart began to vibrate as the dirt path beneath them turned into a cobblestone street. Shops and markets started popping up on the sides of the street as they traveled into the city. They shared the road with other carts and carriages. Villagers and townspeople alike walked alongside them and went about their day-to-day routines of shopping and trade.
Are we there yet? Connor said, stirring back to life.
The cart rounded a corner onto a very long and wide street. At the end of the street was an enormous palace.
I'll take that as a yes, Connor said.
The palace took Alex's breath away. It was perfectly symmetrical and smooth, as if it were made out of sky-gray porcelain. Three prominent towers in the middle of the palace shared a base with a gigantic clock large enough for the whole kingdom to see. The palace almost seemed fake. It was so majestic, and was grander than they had ever imagined.
This is where I'll drop you off, said Smithers, pulling his cart and horse over to the side of the street. Best of luck to both of you young'uns. Enjoy the town.
Thank you so much, the twins said together. They tried to offer him a few gold coins as a thank you, but Smithers insisted that they save their money, and then went on his way. The twins walked around the town for a good while. Everyone seemed to be buzzing with anticipation for the ball later that evening. They found a small market and were able to purchase fresh fruit, vegetables, and breads. Alex kept trying to make small talk with every person she encountered, but most of the townspeople ignored her. Connor kept rolling his eyes at his sister. Everything she saw excited her.
I don't know how I'm going to survive traveling with you if you keep up this constant state of excitement, Connor said. It's exhausting, and it's really getting on my nerves.
I'm sorry, Alex said. We've been around so many trees the last couple days. I'm just so excited to see all the people and their... Ooh, look at that doorknob on that building! It's in the shape of a slipper! Isn't that cute? After a busy afternoon of sightseeing, they found a quiet hill that overlooked the town, and they sat under the shade of a large tree. The sun was starting to descend, and the twins grew anxious at the thought of another day ending.
What's our plan? Connor asked.
Let's see what the journal suggests, Alex said, and pulled it out of her school bag. She flipped through the pages until she came across a section about the glass slipper.
Cinderella's glass slipper is a very difficult item to retrieve. Her slippers, without doubt, are the most cherished possession of the kingdom. First, you must find a way into the palace. This is rather difficult, as there's only one entrance. One of Cinderella's first acts as queen was to get rid of all the servant entrances, so that when people come to the palace, they all enter as equals. Once inside, find a way into Cinderella's royal display room. This will also be difficult, since no one is allowed in the queen's chambers without an invitation from her. The slippers are on display in a glass box on the top of a pillar in the center of the room. The slippers are not hard to remove from inside the glass box, but the room is under constant watch by two guards at its entrance. Find a way to be alone in the royal display room and remove a slipper quietly and quickly. Leave as fast as you can, because as soon as they notice something is missing, the guards will close the palace doors, and you'll be trapped and taken to the dungeon to be hung upside down from your toenails. Best of luck.
How are we going to get into the palace? Connor asked.
Alex began to think of a plan, but she was distracted by a long line of carriages driving down the main street of the town toward the palace. They were elegant and colorful, and each was its own design. Each carriage had at least two horses pulling it, a coachman, a footman riding on the back, and a number of passengers inside.
The ball, Alex said. We'll have to sneak into the ball.
Uh-huh, said Connor, contemplating this information. And what are we supposed to wear? Look at us. We're not dressed formally enough. And I bet we smell really fresh after walking for 3 days straight with no showers.
I have an idea, Alex said.
She opened their bags and took out their blankets. She grabbed hold of Connor and began wrapping the blanket around him, folding it strategically in certain places so it would stay up. Alex wrapped herself in the other blanket.
There, Alex said. Now we look like we're wearing sensible robes.
We look ridiculous, Connor said.
Do you have any other ideas?
Alex asked him.
Do you think there's a fairy godmother hotline we could call? Connor asked.
The twins walked down to the main street. They followed the traffic of carriages toward the palace. The closer they came to the palace, the larger it grew and the more real it became. Many of the coachmen glared at the twins with bewildered and judgmental looks. A few passengers leaned out of their carriage windows to see what the twins were doing.
"Take a picture! It lasts longer!" Connor shouted at them.
"Connor, they don't know what that means," Alex said.
They reached the palace just as the sun was setting. As each carriage neared the front steps of the palace's entrance, its footmen would run around the carriage and gently help the passengers out. Alex and Connor had never seen such beautiful clothing. All the women wore long ball gowns of various colors, fabrics, and stitching. They wore gloves and diamonds. Some wore bows and feathers in their hair. The men all dressed beautifully, too. Some in formal armor, and some in suits with broad, fringed shoulders and square cuffs. All the effort and flair that the guests had put into their appearance made the twins feel very insecure about their impromptu robes. They stuck out like sore thumbs. They were the youngest people there. They were the only ones not dressed in lace or satin, and they were the only ones carrying bags. They looked exactly like what they were, a couple of kids sneaking into a ball. An extensive row of steps led up to the palace's entrance. Alex and Connor began climbing them with the rest of the attendees. It was such a climb, they wondered if they would ever reach the top of it.
"This world has goblins and fairies, but where is an escalator when you need one?" Connor said.
"Connor!" Alex gasped. "Look at this!"
She pointed to a silver star placed in the steps underneath their feet. It said, "This marks the very place where Cinderella left her glass slipper behind on the night she met Prince Charming."
"Can you believe that's the very spot Cinderella left her glass slipper?"
Alex said with both hands pressed against her heart.
"Absolutely," Connor said. "I wouldn't have climbed these steps again if I had left my shoe either."
The twins caused quite a scene at the entrance. Everyone was absolutely appalled by their clothing. Alex could feel herself blushing from the way everyone was staring at her. She felt like she was back at school. One palace guard in particular couldn't stop staring at them. Not in a judgmental way, but as if he had seen them somewhere before and couldn't remember where. He was standing just a step inside the palace entrance, and he greeted all the guests as they passed him. He wore more badges on his uniform than any of the other guards, and he had a very thin, dark beard. Another palace guard was collecting invitations at the doors. The twins began to panic.
"What are we going to do?"
Alex whispered to her brother.
"Let me handle this," Connor said. "I saw this in a movie once. Just go with it."
"Invitations, please," the guard said.
"Our parents have our invitations, but they're already inside," Connor said.
"And who are your parents?" asked the guard snootily.
"Who are our parents?"
yelled Connor, causing a bigger scene than they had already.
"You mean you don't know who we are?"
All the guards and guests looked among one another.
"Connor, calm down,"
Alex said. What was he thinking?
"This man doesn't know who our parents are, Alex," Connor continued. "I'll have you know that our parents invented wishing wells. How dare you show us any disrespect?"
Alex wanted to slap him. She looked apologetically at the people around them. They all scowled in the twins' direction, except for the guard with a thin beard. He was actually smirking at them with gentleness in his eyes.
"I'm afraid you two have to leave now," said the guard, collecting the invitations.
"Leave? You're making the heirs to the wishing well fortune leave?"
Connor exclaimed loudly enough for everyone to hear.
"Connor, just shut up,"
Alex whispered directly into his ear.
"Is there a problem?"
the guard with a thin beard asked as he approached the twins.
"Not at all,"
Alex said, and began backing up, forcing Connor to move with her.
"They don't have an invitation," the other guard said.
"We were just leaving,"
Alex said. "Sorry for the confusion."
"Nonsense," the guard with a thin beard said. "I just saw your parents inside the palace. Why don't I take you to them?"
Alex and Connor froze.
"You did?" Connor said,
and then quickly remembered he had to keep up with his own lie.
"I mean, of course you did."
He threw a dirty look to the other guard.
"Come with me, and I'll take you straight to your parents,"
the guard with a thin beard said. Before they knew it, Alex and Connor were being escorted into the palace. They were completely in over their heads. Did this guard know they were lying, and was he now escorting them directly to the dungeon? Or perhaps Connor's lie was truer than they thought, and they were about to meet a couple that were definitely not their parents.
"Allow me to introduce myself," the guard said. "I'm Sir Lambton, the head of the Queen's Royal Guard. Welcome to the palace."
"Thank you," Connor said. "I'm Connor Wishington, and this is my sister, Alex."
"Where are you from, Mr. and Miss Wishington?"
Lambton asked. Upstate Northern Kingdom, Connor said. Even he looked surprised by the words coming out of his mouth. But our parents have a summer home in the south of the Sleeping Kingdom and a condo in the Fairy Kingdom. Alex's eyes opened so wide that she had to remind herself to blink.
Ah, I see,
Lambton said with a curious look.
Would you like me to take your bags for you?
No, that's quite all right, Alex said. We'll manage. Lambton led the twins down a long hallway behind all the other guests. There were many large portraits of past rulers on the walls, and a red carpet ran under their feet. Alex and Connor were all eyes. They had never been inside a royal palace before. There's so many shiny things to look at. Lambton seemed to be enjoying their excitement. He leaned between them and softly said,
You're sneaking into the palace, aren't you?
Alex desperately looked to Connor, but he was out of lies for the night.
Please don't throw us in the dungeon, Alex pleaded. We didn't mean any harm.
Connor looked at his sister with a raised eyebrow. Did she mean no harm besides breaking into the palace and stealing a cherished item? Lambton chuckled.
I've seen a lot of youngsters try to sneak into a royal ball before, but never have I been so entertained by such an attempt, he said.
So you aren't going to throw us in a cell and hang us upside down by our toenails? Connor asked.
We stopped doing that ages ago, Lambton said. On the contrary, it would be my honor to show you two around.
Really? Connor said.
That would be lovely, Alex said, clasping her hands together. Thank you.
At the end of the hall, Lambton led the twins through a pair of golden doors into the ballroom. At first, the sight was overwhelming. There were so many things to look at, it was impossible to focus on any one thing long enough to comprehend what it was. There was so much movement and color. The biggest chandelier they had ever seen, with thousands of candles, hung from the ceiling above an enormous dance floor. Hundreds of formally dressed men and women filled the space. Some mingled on the sides, while others danced to the music played by a small orchestra in the corner. Everything from the archways to the accents on the walls was golden. A grand staircase descended in the back of the room, just behind two empty thrones. Connor knew it would only be a few seconds before Alex started crying.
It's so beautiful, Alex said, with teary eyes. Is this where they had the ball where Cinderella and the prince met?
Indeed, Lambton said. I'll never forget it. I was just a simple guard back then. The prince was meeting all the young women in the kingdom in hopes of finding a bride. Cinderella was the last to arrive that night. She entered the room, just as we are now, and everyone stopped to look at her.
How did she look? Alex asked.
Magical, Lambton said with a smile,
lost in his own memory.
She wore a long violet dress that sparkled as she walked. I remember hearing the soft taps of her glass slippers as she walked past. As soon as the prince saw her, it was love at first sight. The whole palace could feel it.
Suddenly, a man blew a trumpet at the foot of the grand staircase.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man with the trumpet announced. It is with great honor that I welcome you to the royal ball this evening. Now please give a warm welcome to their royal majesties, King Charming and Queen Cinderella.
The guests cheered and burst into applause. The royal couple entered the ballroom, slowly making their way down the grand staircase. Alex grabbed onto Connor's arm.
Connor,
Alex gasped.
It's Cinderella! It's Cinderella!
Although the twins had only seen illustrations of her, Cinderella was more beautiful than they had ever expected. Her hair was auburn and styled up behind a crystal tiara. She wore white gloves, and a long, turquoise gown flowed down around her, accentuating her pregnant belly. Despite all the gold and the glorious chandelier, her eyes and smile were the brightest things in the room. King Charming was the definition of dashing. He was every bit as handsome as any description ever written about him. He had a mesmerizing smile and thick, wavy hair under a large golden crown. He could easily have been a movie star back in the twins' world. The king and queen took their seats on the thrones, and the guard with the trumpet blew the opening notes of another announcement.
Let the ball begin!
The guard with the trumpet proclaimed, and was greeted with another round of excited applause. The majority of the guests rushed to the dance floor. The orchestra began playing a fast-paced symphony. All the guests paired up and began waltzing around the room, each looking lovingly into their partner's eyes the entire time. The king and queen remained seated. You could tell Cinderella wanted to join the dance, but her pregnancy was preventing her from doing so. King Charming only had eyes for his wife. He was enjoying her watching the dance more than the actual dance itself. At one point, each of the dancing men collected a shoe from their partners and circled them with it before placing it back on their feet, a Cinderellian tribute, no doubt. Time flew by as the twins watched the ball.
The unborn child Cinderella was carrying must have been kicking from all the excitement. Cinderella appeared to have some discomfort and had been rubbing her belly and shifting in her seat for some time. She eventually whispered something into King Charming's ear. King Charming took his wife's hand and carefully helped her back up the grand staircase. The guard blew his trumpet again.
The queen is tired and wishes to rest, but she and the king welcome you to continue the celebration without their presence.
The crowd happily obliged and continued their fun.
Would you like a tour of the palace?
Lambton asked the twins.
More than anything, Alex said.
Lambton escorted the twins out of the ballroom and down a similar hall to the one they had first entered the palace through. It, too, was home to several portraits of past rulers and a long red carpet.
This palace was built over 500 years ago,
Lambton told the twins as he walked.
It's been home to the Charming dynasty since then. This is a portrait of King Chester Charming, Cinderella's late father-in-law.
He referred to a large painting of an old, bearded man with a crown. He looked exactly like his son, but much older.
How many King Charmings have there been? Connor asked.
We've lost count, Lambton said. There are three currently. King Chester had four sons. Chance Charming, Chase Charming, Chandler Charming, and Charlie Charming.
Each of the Charming brothers had his own portrait on the wall.
King Chance Charming is the oldest and is married to Queen Cinderella,
Lambton said, and gestured to the portrait of the man they had just seen in the ballroom.
King Chase Charming is the second oldest and is married to Queen Sleeping Beauty,
Lambton continued. Chase looked exactly like his brother, except he was a bit taller and wore a goatee.
King Chandler Charming is the third oldest and is married to Queen Snow White,
Lambton said. Chandler looked like his brothers, but had the longest hair of all of them. The last portrait in the hallway caught the twins' eyes the most. It was hung slightly away from the rest and depicted the youngest of the Charming brothers. He was young and had a big smile. A single candle was lit beside the portrait. It appeared to be a memorial of sorts.
Who is that? Connor asked Lambton.
Lambton's happy expression faded away.
That's Prince Charlie, the fourth son of King Chester. He's the long-lost Charming Prince,
Lambton said.
He vanished one night many years ago, and no one ever saw him again.
That's horrible, Alex said.
His brothers led massive search parties throughout all the kingdoms, but they never found a trace of him,
Lambton said sadly.
Fortunately, some good came out of the search. While on the road, Prince Chandler came across Snow White in her glass coffin, and Prince Chase discovered Sleeping Beauty asleep in her castle, and they both broke the spells put on them and were married.
That's incredible, Alex said. So if Prince Charlie never went missing, Sleeping Beauty and Snow White would still be unconscious.
That may be, Lambton said. And since his brothers took all the eligible princesses, Prince Chance had to put on the ball where he met Cinderella. Everything happens for a reason, I suppose.
Alex and Connor couldn't stop staring at the portrait of Prince Charlie. There was a sad energy in this part of the hallway, and the twins were especially sensitive to it. The long-lost prince couldn't have been much older than them when he'd gone missing. Lambton clearly appreciated the twins' interest.
Now, follow me. I have something very special I want to show you,
Lambton said. Lambton led the twins down another hallway that led deeper into the palace. This part of the palace was completely vacant, and it made the twins more and more nervous as they walked. They had no idea where Lambton was taking them, and they were too timid to ask. They rounded a corner, and at the end of another long hall was a pair of black double doors. There were two guards on either side of the doors and a large stone arch above them with a sign that read, Queen Cinderella's Royal Room of Display. Alex and Connor looked to each other with light in their eyes. They had made it.
Hello, Sir Lambton, one of the guards said.
Good evening,
Lambton said. He pushed open the doors, and the twins followed him inside. They set their bags down and looked around the room. The display room was a wide chamber with white pillars and sky-blue tiled floor. The ceiling was domed and covered in golden stars. The room was illuminated by moonlight coming from a large window in the back and then reflected throughout by a series of hanging mirrors. Several special objects were on display and placed on the top of short pillars and surrounded by thick glass cases. Brooms, buckets, and old raggedy dresses were all put on show. A family of mice lived in a glass case and a miniature replica of the palace. In the very center of the room were Cinderella's glass slippers. They were beautiful and petite, made from pure crystal glass and decorated with diamonds. The twins could feel their hearts sink into the pits of their stomachs as soon as they saw them. They were so close.
Those are beautiful, Alex said.
The slippers had put her in a trance.
I'm quite partial to them myself, said a soft voice that didn't belong to Alex, Connor, or Lambton. Sitting on the windowsill in the back of the room was Cinderella herself. They had been so astonished by the display room, they hadn't noticed her.
Your Majesty, Lambton said, please forgive me. I didn't see you there. I was just giving some guests a tour of the palace.
Quite all right, Sir Lambton, Cinderella said, and walked across the chamber to greet them. I like to come in here occasionally after long days to clear my head. Who might these two be?
Alex and Connor couldn't speak. They were completely starstruck.
This is Alex and Connor, Lambton told her.
Pleasure to meet you, Cinderella said, and held out her hand.
We're big fans, Connor said, and shook her hand a little too hard. Alex couldn't move.
You're like my hero, Alex said to her,
and that's all she could manage to say.
Thank you, sweetheart, Cinderella said. Welcome to my little room of memories. It's remarkable, Alex squeaked. Would you like me to show you around? Cinderella asked.
Alex still couldn't move her limbs, but was able to nod.
Cinderella began a small tour and took them around the room to each of the items on display.
These are the brooms and buckets I use to clean my stepmother's house every day, Cinderella said. They were my first dancing partners. I remember whenever I was home alone, I used to dance with them around the house and pretend I was at a big royal dance. Although I must say they weren't the best at conversation.
Cinderella and Lambton laughed. Alex and Connor were still in shock that they were in her presence. They were standing next to Cinderella, and she had a sense of humor.
Over here are my raggedy old clothes that my fairy godmother turned into a beautiful ball gown, Cinderella continued. They're not much to look at now, but whenever my fairy godmother visits us, they turn back into the beautiful ball gown she created for me.
That's really cool, Connor said.
These are my mice, Cinderella said, and showed the twins the miniature palace full of mice. She opened a latch and took a mouse out of the case. She gently petted it, and it peacefully nestled in her hand.
Are they the mice that were transformed into horses and coachmen for your carriage? Alex asked, finally finding her voice.
The original mice passed away, but these are their children and their children's children, Cinderella said. I look after them as a thank you. They have a horrible reputation, but mice are actually very gentle creatures. You just have to give them a chance.
Cinderella put the mouse back with the others and walked to the center of the room.
And these, I believe, need no explanation, she said, and brought the twins to the glass slippers.
She removed the glass case entirely and took one of the glass slippers in her hand.
Those couldn't have been comfortable, Connor said.
They were surprisingly easy to move around in, Cinderella said.
Did your feet ever get sweaty? Connor went on. That couldn't have looked really... Ah!
Alex elbowed him in the ribs. Cinderella snickered.
Would you like to hold one? Cinderella asked them.
Alex nodded harder than she had ever nodded before. Cinderella gently lifted one from the pillar and handed it to her. A magical feeling went through Alex. She was holding a piece of fairy tale history. Perhaps the most famous object of all fantasy time was in her hands. She couldn't help but get a bit emotional.
Connor, on the other hand, kept thinking of ways to steal the slipper.
Alex looked up at her brother and knew what he was thinking by the intensity in his eyes. For a moment, they shared the same thought. Was it possible to take off with it? Connor was actually thinking if it was possible to outrun Lambton and the two guards outside the door.
What was it like? Alex asked Cinderella. What was it like to go from being a servant to being queen? What was it like to be saved from a horrible situation? Your life is literally, well, a Cinderella story.
A sadness came to Cinderella's face.
I never thought my life would change so drastically, so I always made the most of what I had, Cinderella said. I always laugh at the term Cinderella story, because if you ask me, it doesn't matter what life you're living, life never has a solution. No matter how hard the struggles are that you leave behind, new struggles always take their place. People forget that I wasn't liked very much by the people of the Charming Kingdom when I first came to live at the palace, Cinderella said. Not too many people were thrilled with the idea of a servant girl becoming their queen. Many people called me the Pumpkin Princess, or the Mouse Monarch, when they first discovered the details of how I had come to the ball that night. I had to earn the kingdom's respect, and it wasn't easy.
Being a queen has to have some perks, though, right? Connor asked. No more scrubbing floors, or dancing with cleaning supplies, or talking to mice.
Meeting the man of my dreams and starting a family is the best thing that will ever happen to me, Cinderella said with a smile, and rubbed her belly. And that is what makes me the happiest and luckiest woman in the world. However, living a public life is a difficult thing to do, and even now I still find it a bit overwhelming. No matter what you do, you can never please everyone, and that was the hardest lesson to learn. In fact, I'm still learning it.
This was all such a revelation to Alex. Suddenly, the fairy tale world seemed even more real than it had before. She never thought she could respect Cinderella more than she already did, but she had never thought about the story from her point of view. Alex set the glass slipper back beside the other one. At first, Connor shot her a look.
What are you doing? We have to steal that.
But they both knew they couldn't take it, at least not tonight, not after the kindness they had been shown.
After all the magical things that have happened in my life, this is my most prized possession, Cinderella said, her hand still on her pregnant stomach. And she's going to be here any day now.
How do you know it's a girl? Alex asked.
Mother's intuition, Cinderella said. She never sits still when she hears music, so she must have my taste and her father's energy.
One of the guards from the hallway burst into the display room.
Your Majesty, Sir Lambton, your presence has been requested in the ballroom, the guard said very seriously.
Something was wrong.
What's the matter? Sir Lambton asked.
Soldiers from the Northern Kingdom. They've come with a message for the king and queen, he said.
Lambton handed the twins their bags, and before they knew it, the twins were following him, Cinderella, and the other guards out of the display room and down the hallway toward the ballroom.
Now how are we going to get hold of one of the glass slippers? Connor whispered to Alex. We'll have to collect all the other items first and then come back for it, Alex said. It should be easier to explain why we need it if we have the other items. We've already established a trusting relationship with them.
I knew I should have grabbed one when I had the chance, Connor said.
They re-entered the ballroom. All the guests were still, and the orchestra was dead silent. Cinderella reunited with her husband at the thrones. Dozens of the same soldiers dressed in silver armor who Alex and Connor had seen on their first day in the Land of Stories were now spread throughout the ballroom.
Forgive our intrusion, Your Majesty. My name is Sir Grant. I am the head of Queen Snow White's Royal Guard. We have news regarding the Evil Queen, the leader of the soldiers said.
What is it? King Charming said.
Everyone in the room could tell it was not good news by his tone. You could have cut the tension and worry in the air with a knife.
Last night, a magic mirror that belonged to the Evil Queen was stolen from her former chambers, Sir Grant said. The Evil Queen is still very much at large, and now that she has her former mirrors, makes her a much greater threat to all of us. We are asking, pleading, if anyone in the Charming Kingdom knows anything about where the Evil Queen is hiding, that they please let us know immediately.
Snow White's soldiers filed out of the ballroom. King Charming and Cinderella embraced each other, worried both for themselves and for what the news meant for their kingdom.
It was lovely to meet you, children, but I must go now, Lambton said to them.
He patted their shoulders and then headed out after the soldiers. Many of the guests began leaving as well. Alex and Connor followed them out, down the entrance steps and away from the palace.
This whole Evil Queen situation is starting to concern me, Alex said.
I know, but it's not really our problem, Connor said. We'll be long gone before anything else happens.
I suppose so, Alex said.
Where are we off to now? Connor asked.
The Red Riding Hood Kingdom is north of here, Alex said. I say that's the best direction to head. I hope we have better luck getting hold of Red Riding Hood's basket.
We'd better not chicken out this time, Connor said.
Gosh, we were so close! He clenched a tight fist.
We just couldn't have taken it, not without permission, Alex said. It wouldn't have felt right.
I'm so tired of being a good person, Connor said.
Despite having failed to collect a glass slipper and the abrupt end to their evening, the twins had had a pretty fantastic night. It wasn't every day they got to have such an intimate conversation with one of the most famous women in history. Luckily, the twins found a night driver transporting a cart full of pears to a village in the northern part of the Charming Kingdom. They convinced him to let them ride in the back of his carriage in exchange for a few gold coins. It would only be a few miles' walk to the Red Riding Hood Kingdom from there. Connor fell asleep as soon as they climbed aboard. Alex couldn't sleep, so she decided to read through the journal again. She reached into her bag and was astounded to discover what was inside it.
Connor!
Alex gasped. Connor jumped back to consciousness.
What is it?
he asked. He looked over and saw something very shiny in his sister's hand. His eyes were still a little blurry from sleeping, and he had to let them adjust before realizing what it was.
A glass slipper!
Connor exclaimed, and Alex gestured for him to keep quiet so the driver wouldn't hear them.
How in the world did we get one? Did you steal it? I thought it was you.
Alex's mouth was so wide, it could have fit a dozen of the pears inside it.
No, it wasn't me, I swear. Do you think Lambton or Cinderella put it in your bag?
Connor asked.
Do you think one of them knew we needed it?
I have no idea, Alex said. She couldn't believe she was actually holding on to one of Cinderella's glass slippers. They both were completely dumbfounded.
Looks like our trip to the Charming Kingdom wasn't such a waste after all, Connor said.